a Katra Podcast Conversations for the curious essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, well, we're really getting down to basics, pulling out the scales, the ledgers, because we're going to get extremely quantitative about the biggest picture there is. Our focus is Vaclav Smil's huge work, Harvesting the Biosphere, a quantitative summary. You know, if you've ever felt a bit lost in all the abstract talk about climate change or sustainability, Smil is kind of the perfect antidote. He just cuts through it all. He gives us the ultimate accounting of humanity's physical footprint. And not in theory, no, but in cold, hard, measurable stuff. Kilograms, tons, petagrams, real weight.
It's such a crucial way to look at things. Because Smil is tackling what he calls our collective biomass blindness. It's easy to forget, right? We live in these complex, you know, digital economies, and we don't always see that the whole thing, our food, clothes, housing, everything, it fundamentally rests on the planet's living matter. And that living matter, it's a finite biological resource. So our mission today is basically to follow Smil's trail as he meticulously adds up the total physical scale of our impact. We're tracing consumption from like prehistoric times right up to the industrial age. We really want you to grasp the frankly, stunning physical scale of our material dominance on Earth.
Yeah, and to tackle a question that big, you definitely need a specific kind of thinker. So let's talk about the man himself, Vaclav Smil. He's a distinguished professor emeritus, incredibly prolific. I mean, over 40 books covering energy, food, population, history, just everything. He's a real master synthesizer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But Smil's authority, it doesn't just come from the sheer volume. You know, it's his unique, I don't say radical commitment to quantitative analysis.
Yeah.
He has like zero time for hype or vague predictions or grand policy statements that aren't backed by numbers. Instead, his whole analysis is grounded in the hard physical realities, material flows, energy flows. That's his world. He's famous for pulling together these vast, disparate data sets, things like, you know, measuring the carbon in a single stalk of wheat or charting the tonnage of global fish catches. He builds this comprehensive, verifiable balance sheet of our relationship with the living world. It's the kind of physical reality check that, honestly, so many debates really need.
He really does provide that non-negotiable baseline, doesn't he? The denominator you can't argue with. Okay, so let's get into the core idea of harvesting the biosphere. Smil argues that the whole story of human civilization, its rise, its complexity, it's best understood not through, say, politics or culture, but by quantifying our ever-increasing take of the Earth's biomass.
Exactly. And to do that, you need a core metric, a unit of account. So Smil introduces the fundamental currency for this whole accounting exercise, net primary production, or NPP. Think of NPP as the planet's fixed annual biological budget.
Yeah.
It's the total amount of new plant biomass created each year through photosynthesis. It's sunlight converted into life, basically. And for land ecosystems, Smil estimates this budget is roughly 105 billion tons of carbon fixed by plants every year. That's the ceiling.
105 billion tons. Wow. Okay. So when we talk sustainability, that number, that finite biological pie, that's the absolute limit we're working within.
Precisely.
And the book takes you on this incredible journey through history. We start way back with hunter-gatherer societies. Their claim on global NPP, tiny, really small, local. They lived within the food web, essentially. Sustainable by definition, almost.
Then comes traditional agriculture. That's when humanity first starts, you know, systematically redirecting local biomass flows, clearing land, focusing on certain plants. The real climax, the point where the numbers just explode off the charts, that's the modern industrial civilization.
Right. That industrial period, it wasn't just machines. It was this massive external energy source, fossil fuels, that just supercharged our ability to harvest, leading to consumption on a scale never seen before. And all of this builds up to the book's most powerful and maybe most sobering metric, human appropriation of net primary production, HNPTP. HNPP represents the total share of the planet's annual biological production that humanity either uses directly or, and this is critical, prevents from growing in the first place.
Ah, so like paving over land for cities, that counts too.
Cities, roads, infrastructure, all that land can't produce biomass anymore. So Smil's goal is to make this invisible biological foundation totally visible through HNPP. He wants to show the staggering percentage of the planet's capacity we now control or divert.
Okay, let's dig into that quantitative journey a bit more. Smil starts by setting the baseline. He notes that while oceans are huge, most of the accessible NPP happens on land. Hunter-gatherer societies, even if they used fire strategically for hunting, their global claim was minuscule. They adapted to the environment, the first really big systemic shift, the agricultural revolution. And it wasn't just about planting seeds, as you said. It was a massive, deliberate redirection of biomass flows. It meant large-scale land conversion, clearing diverse forests, grasslands, and basically simplifying complex ecosystems to funnel productivity into just a few species we liked.
Domesticated species.
Right. That allowed populations to grow, sure, but the trade-off was this huge simplification of the living world around us.
That really sets the stage. But Smil's numbers show the real break from history came later. The Industrial Revolution wasn't just about machines replacing muscle. It introduced this external energy subsidy fossil fuels that let us bypass the natural limits of sunlight conversion. First through mechanization, yes, but much, much more significantly through a technology most people barely think about.
Okay, what's that?
The Haber-Bosch process for making synthetic nitrogen fertilizers. Before this invention, crop yields were basically limited by how much nitrogen naturally occurring bacteria could fix in the soil. Haber-Bosch uses incredible heat and pressure, powered mainly by natural gas, to make reactive nitrogen fertilizer on a massive, global, industrial scale.
And that single innovation, Smil emphasizes this, it just fundamentally shattered previous biological limits on food production.
It's an astounding figure, he cites.
Yeah.
The Haber-Bosch process is responsible for feeding almost half the world's population today.
Half the world, just from that one process. That's mind-blowing.
It really is. And what it shows is something crucial and often missed. Modern food production isn't really pastoral farming anymore. It's better understood as an industrial process. Specifically, converting fossil fuels, oil, and gas into edible biomass. Our current population density, even geopolitical stability, rests heavily on that industrial conversion.
That completely reframes things, doesn't it? If our food is basically refined fossil fuel, what happens when that energy gets expensive or restricted?
It creates massive vulnerabilities, huge instability. But Smil doesn't just stop at crops. He gives us the full picture, the comprehensive harvest tally. We need to look at the next two big slices of the pie, forestry and livestock.
Okay, forestry first. Smil carefully quantifies wood use. It's easy for, say, us in developed countries to think of lumber for houses or paper, but we often forget that for billions of people globally, wood for fuel, just basic cooking and heating, is still their primary energy source. He also documents the huge shift from slow-growing, biodiverse old-growth forests to faster-growing managed plantations. These are much less diverse, simplified ecosystems designed purely for human benefit.
Right. And then there's global livestock.
Mm.
The numbers Smil presents on the growth of animal agriculture, cattle, pigs, poultry, are just staggering. Biologically speaking, these animals are pretty inefficient bioconverters. They need a massive amount of plant feed crops grown specifically for them, plus grazing land. You might need, say, 5, maybe even 10 kilograms of plant matter to produce just 1 kilogram of meat or dairy protein. This massive conversion process just amplifies the total human biomass footprint across the planet exponentially.
And that leads directly to a figure from the book that just stops you in your tracks, a real moment of perspective.
It does. It's one of his most quoted findings. Smil calculates that humans and their domestic animals now make up more than 95% of the total zoo mass of terrestrial vertebrates.
Whoa, okay. Can you quickly break down zoo mass for listeners who might not have heard that term?
Sure, yeah. Zoo mass is just the total combined weight, the sheer mass of all animal life in a specific category or environment. So when Smil says humans and our livestock are 95% of the land vertebrate zoo mass, he means animals with backbones, mammals, birds, reptiles, amphibians. It means we've profoundly reshaped life on Earth. We've basically replaced the vast majority of wild land vertebrates with ourselves and the animals that serve us, cows, pigs, chickens, sheep, and so on.
That single number, 95%. It hits harder than any abstract talk about biodiversity loss, doesn't it? Just shows the scale of replacement.
It's the ultimate measure of our physical dominance.
So connecting that back, Smil doesn't just stop at land, right? He looks at the oceans, too.
Indeed. He tracks the rise of industrial fishing. From small boats and nets to these huge, technologically advanced factory ships that process fish right there on board. The data clearly shows this rapid, unsustainable boom in global fish catches, peaking around the 1990s, followed by stagnation or even decline for many important fish stocks.
Yeah, I remember hearing about collapses.
The North Atlantic cod fishery collapse is the classic, tragic example Smil often uses. You saw this intense fishing pressure, catches hitting an unsustainable peak, then suddenly, boom. A catastrophic collapse, and the cod populations still haven't fully recovered decades later. It's a stark, brutal lesson about hitting biophysical limits in a shared resource. It also illustrates what scientists call fishing down the food web. Once the big predators are gone, you start targeting smaller, less valuable species.
Okay, so let's bring it all together then. The crops, the feed for livestock, the timber, the fuel wood, the land we've paved over, the fisheries. What's the final number? What does Smil calculate for the total HAMPP?
Well, the synthesis is really the book's core message, his stunning non-negotiable conclusion. After meticulously accounting for all these different factors, Smil concludes that humanity now diverts, co-ops, or prevents somewhere between 25% and 40% of all potential terrestrial net primary production.
25 to 40% of everything the land could produce each year.
Yes. That range reflects different calculation methods and boundary definitions, but the scale is undeniable. Mm-hmm. That figure is the measure of our dominance over the planet's living systems. It's the major achievement of the book, quantifying that figure.
Yeah, it's just an immense number to comprehend. So, okay, having built this incredibly detailed ledger, what are the big lessons, the key themes Smil wants us to take away?
I think the first theme is simple but really profound. Quantification as understanding. Smil insists we need rigorous, hard numbers, relentless measurement, not vague talk or emotional appeals. Only by focusing on the physical reality, the tons and joules, can we truly grasp the scale and speed of our civilization's metabolism. It helps cut through the noise, you know?
Break it down to brass tacks. What's the second theme?
The second is confronting that biomass blindness we mentioned earlier. Especially for urban dwellers, right? We feel disconnected. You buy food wrapped in plastic, the biological origin seems distant, maybe irrelevant. Smil forces us to remember, our high-tech society is fundamentally a biological enterprise, built on photosynthesis, powered by ancient sunlight stored in fossil fuels.
That grocery store trip suddenly feels different when you frame it like that. The whole system fueled by ancient sunlight.
Exactly. And that leads straight into the third, maybe the toughest theme. Biophysical limits are not negotiable. Smil really respects technology for improving efficiency, but he's clear. Technology cannot erase the fundamental limit of NPP. The planetary biological pie is essentially fixed in size each year. This is the ultimate reality check for any policy discussion. You just can't negotiate with the laws of thermodynamics or biology.
Okay, but let me push back slightly here because this is where it gets tricky, right? If the pie is fixed, does Smil maybe underplay technologies that could fundamentally change our relationship with NPP? Things like, say, vertical farming, reducing land use dramatically, or maybe cell-based proteins that skip the inefficient livestock step altogether. Doesn't that change the equation?
That's the crucial question looking forward, absolutely. Smil is generally skeptical.
Yeah.
And his skepticism comes back to physics. Those technologies, vertical farms, lab meat, they might reduce land use, true. But they still require huge inputs of energy, often high-grade electrical energy, which today mostly comes from fossil fuels or other intensive sources. Smil's core point, I think, is that you're often just trading one limitation, like land or direct NPP, for another, like energy or material inputs. You can't escape the overall resource and energy balance sheet. So any techno-optimism needs to be viewed through that hard lens of physical resource flows. It's not magic.
That definitely adds a layer of, well, realism, mm-hmm. or gravity. And Smil's data leads to these really memorable summary statements, doesn't it? He frames the numbers with real historical weight.
Oh, absolutely. Think about his central thesis, which basically reframes all of human history. He says something like, the history of human civilization can be rewritten as the story of our escalating appropriation of the Earth's net primary production. That just gives you a completely different lens. History defined by what we consume from the living world.
And that quote about agriculture really sticks with you too, the one connecting it to fossil fuels.
Right. Modern agriculture is best understood not as a form of cultivation, but as the industrial process of converting fossil fuels into edible biomass.
The power of that is just stark. It highlights this fundamental dependency of our food security on oil and gas that we often prefer not to think about. Mm-hmm. And the Zoomis figure, the 95% one we talked about, that deserves repeating too. It shows our presence hasn't just been part of nature. It's been a thorough, almost total reconfiguration of it, replacing the wild world with one engineered for our immediate needs.
So given all this precise, sometimes challenging data, how can we actually use it? How do we apply Smil's numbers in our daily lives or in policy? Well, one clear application is informed consumption. Smil's numbers make it incredibly clear why your diet matters so much to your overall biomass footprint. Knowing livestock are inefficient bioconverters, well, it immediately shows why a plant-heavy diet requires vastly less land, energy, and total plant matter biomass than a meat-heavy one. It empowers choices based on a measurable impact. And what's interesting is smell often emphasizes efficiency over just reduction, at least as a starting point. He suggests that improving efficiency, especially tackling food waste, offers huge immediate gains. He notes, I think, that roughly one-third of all global food production is wasted somewhere along the chain. Mm-hmm. Reducing that waste, that's like freeing up a third of the world's current agricultural MPP use without fundamentally changing diets or production overnight. That's massive.
A third. Wow. Okay, that's a huge lever. And a third application.
I'd say rethinking land use. Smill's work forces you to see every hectare of fertile land paved over for a new subdivision, or a mall, or a highway, as a permanent loss of accessible NPP. It fundamentally changes how planners and policymakers should value prime agricultural land versus allowing unchecked urban sprawl. It becomes a clear trade-off, a zero-sum game for that piece of land.
It really forces a long-term perspective. Okay, final thoughts. What's the biggest takeaway for you from digging into Smill's work here?
For me, it's the vital importance of historical perspective and just plain realism. This high consumption life we have now, supporting 8 billion people, it's not the historical norm. It's a very recent and honestly quite precarious situation made possible by this massive one-time energy subsidy from fossil fuels. As that subsidy changes or diminishes, the whole biological balance sheet has to shift too. We need to remember that.
Yeah, that's sobering. My personal takeaway is just the sheer scale of it all. That number appropriating up to 40% of potential land-based NPP feels like maybe the single most important environmental and economic fact of our era. It's a physical measurement that you just can't ignore or wish away. It sets the stage for everything else.
And maybe that leaves us with the final, really provocative thought Smill hammers home. The ultimate limits to our civilization. They aren't financial. They aren't purely technological either. They are biophysical. The laws of thermodynamics, the finite nature of net primary production. Those are the real non-negotiable constraints. We simply have to learn collectively how to operate within that fixed biological budget.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.